Hey team, it's Frances. I had a great conversation with the lovely Jim Mora from RNZ Sunday Mornings. Everything really from the economy, is it going to get any better anytime soon, to your KiwiSaver, what on earth is going on with AI, and of course, managing your money through the Christmas period. And a really big overview, basically, of everything that's happening with your cash. His team were kind enough to say that I could repost that conversation here. So hopefully it helps. Enjoy.
Our last Fast Money report for this year with Frances Cook now. We try and cover a bit of ground on a short amount of time for you. Frances Cook is the former Business Desk Investments Editor. She's a podcaster and best-selling author of Your Money, Your Future, and Tales from a Financial Hot Mess. Kia ora, thanks for joining us again.
Good morning. Always lovely to be here.
You've been writing about that special feeling in the old days when you used to get lovely green $20 notes and Christmas cards. I remember that thrill, actually. No one does that for me now.
I know. Isn't it funny? Everyone wants to give you a really thoughtful gift, and I do love that. But I remember when I was a kid, you'd always be really excited by the grandparents who were a bit unsure of what age and stage you were at, so what toy was appropriate. And so you'd open up the Christmas card and you'd get that $20 note. Or if you were really lucky, if you got that purple $50, you were just like, absolute jackpot. I am the richest person who has ever lived. That was a thrill like no other.
I don't ever remember getting 50, but yeah, that would have been.
I think it only happened once or twice, and it was so exciting. It stuck. I've been chasing that high ever since.
To Money Matters, the GDP bounce. Could this yet be a false dawn? I'm sorry to be down with my first question for economic recovery, a sort of Santa rally, because dairy auction prices are down, tourist numbers have plateaued, workers are still leaving the country, the global economy is still fragile, we keep getting told, and NZ Inc. keeps getting deeper in debt as ways of saving money look harder to find. So what is your surmise on where we are right now?
Yeah, and hey, let's do it. Let's jump into the sad stuff before we hopefully give people a little bit more of a lift on the money front. All of the projections that we're getting are that the middle and second half of next year should be a bit better. Again, at the risk of just being a bit of a gloom fairy, they said that this time last year. One of my favourite shops, and it's the third one this has happened to. So I live in Teramutu, centre of the universe, love it. And my third shop that I really enjoy going to has just shut down. You walk along some of the high streets and things are looking really grim. There are empty shop fronts everywhere.
On your Substack, aren't you using the S&P 500 number pre-Christmas as a sign that there may be a weak start to next year? Have I got that right? I was just thumbing through it.
So it's the last five trading days of December and the first two of January, and that sends share market prices up. Usually, this is historically speaking, an average Santa rally of about 1.3%. And so that's pretty standard. It's that, you know, people sort of invest their end of year bonus, they tidy up their end of year financials, they wrap things up, and we usually see a bit of a boost through the share market at this time. If you don't see that boost, it's a real sign of what's to come. It almost always is a real sign that the next year is going to be a bit of a toughie. And we got proof of that last year, because last year we did not get a good Santa rally and last year was a real toughie. So, for those who like watching the share market, it can be a bit of an indicator of what's coming next. Hopefully Santa doesn't put coal in our investment stockings this year.
For us to turn into diamonds. I've never heard of a Christmas bonus. I can't remember having one.
It's just, we don't get them in media.
No, we don't. A national government would gradually increase KiwiSaver contributions to match Australia's 12% rate, which makes sense in a big picture way, doesn't it? Allowing New Zealand to stop relying so much on overseas money for infrastructure and so on. But it's been criticised for all the little effects it'll have. Speaking of shops, closing down in rural towns, because that's always so sad, isn't it? And you think about individual circumstances and wonder what they are. But it's been criticised for all the little effects it'll have on take-home pay, hasn't it? And it does already, doesn't it, Francis? Employer contributions often mean it can simply come out of your salary, which is the case in Australia, isn't it?
So, yeah, what's happening there is the government is promising to make it that you have to contribute a higher level to your KiwiSaver, and so your employer also has to match it. Now, on those, I actually think that's a really good call. We do need to save more for retirement. But they've done that at the same time as reducing the government contribution.
Yes.
And, you know, they're making all of these comparisons to Australia's system. Well, Australia has brilliant tax breaks to make sure that if you do put your money into your retirement savings, you keep more of it for yourself. And it's a really good deal. So if they want to make that comparison, then they should also stump up and have some sort of government candy coating on this too, whether it's a KiwiSaver contribution, whether it's a tax break, whatever. You just do have to have that in there. And what you say there about, you know, it's often coming out of people's salaries. Yeah. The latest stats we've got on that, 25% of employers are including KiwiSaver in salary for all of their employees. 45% of employers are doing it for some. And that means, you know, you're supposed to sign up. The way KiwiSaver was designed, you're supposed to sign up and then your KiwiSaver, your employer contribution from your KiwiSaver is supposed to be on top of your salary. They can make it part of, you know, you get paid $70,000 and your KiwiSaver is part of that. So you just get less in the hand. That is, to my eyes, a loophole. And more businesses are going for that loophole as they try to keep wage costs down. So saying, oh, people are going to save more and their employer will match it. Well, if they're using total remuneration, it gets put all on the employee. And then that's really hard. You're being told to sacrifice your money now, save for a rainy day, do all the good things, but you get absolutely no reward for it. I think that's just unrealistic on how people work.
I wonder how Australians cope with having a bigger chunk of their money set aside.
Yeah. Well, they get paid more at the start.
Yeah, that's true.
They do have a higher wage economy. It's also that those people then cost the overall system less. In general, you know, these people go to retirement able to pay for more of their own costs, able to pay for more of their own healthcare, needing less in terms of welfare support. This is actually, in the long run, a cheaper solution for all of us. So we need to get real about how we support people to save for retirement.
I know we bang on about this, and I don't want to do it for too long this morning, but affording retirement is actually the big wave gathering out in the ocean, waiting to become a bit of a tsunami, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's housing costs are going up. More people are renting in retirement. And our pension is set up on the idea of you having a paid off home. More and more people are needing substantial amounts of savings to be able to pay rates, insurance, food costs. These are all things that have been hit really, really hard by the increased cost of living. They're not exactly optional costs. Or if they are optional costs, it means that people need more welfare support. So it means that the rest of us pick up the tab. So again, we need to get real about how we're going to support people through this, because it ends up becoming more expensive overall.
Would it be feasible to raise the retirement age by a month a year or 2 months a year? That would seem more painless and, in the digital era, probably more easily done. No one's ever suggested that because, you know, to win elections, you don't want to lose older voters. But at the same time, it's all knocking on your door, the future.
Well, exactly. The politicians are terrified of this. I mean, you say, is it feasible? I mean, technically, anything is feasible. Will they do it? The problem is we actually are running out of time to talk about this. And the longer we leave it, the harder it's going to be. Treasury put out a report that government debt is going to go to 200% of GDP, as in the size of our economy. It'll be 200% the size of our economy just if we don't deal with the pension payments. And it's currently, they keep talking about how in debt we are. Well, it's currently 43% of GDP. They've said, you know, Treasury says that basically we need to increase to the age of 72, pension age, over the next 40 years.
All right. The OCR comes down, mortgage interest rates go up. What's wrong with that picture? And why, please? Because that seems to be quite a, if not a surprise, then certainly a precedent.
I know, it's interesting, isn't it? And I had suspected that the banks would start putting rates up again because the Reserve Bank was sounding a little bit more optimistic in some of its reporting. You know, I was saying at the beginning about second half of 2026 might be better. The Reserve Bank is one of the ones that's saying it might be better then. So the banks start planning ahead. A lot of their mortgage rates are locked in for a year or two. And so they're like, okay, if it's getting better then you'll probably lift interest rates. So we're going to lift rates for that now. And so now we have this system where the Reserve Bank's trying to calm everyone down and be like, no, we weren't that excited. You don't get too excited now. Like, calm down, everyone, please calm down. The Reserve Bank does sometimes have to walk that line where it talks down the economy a little bit to make sure all the financial providers like banks don't get too overexcited and start lifting their rates, anticipating the Reserve Bank doing the same. But they're also trying to not talk down the economy too much and make the business community feel really miserable and like they shouldn't hire anyone because it's all going to get worse. So they are walking a very tight, tightrope there.
Well, speaking of big waves gathering, I want to ask you about this because I may have got it wrong, but you'll tell me. In the Financial Times, trading in products that pay out when companies default is soaring as investors hunt for ways to protect their portfolios against the risk of the artificial intelligence boom turning into a bust. So you reap the profits from your Google or Nvidia shareholding, and at the same time you try and pass on the risk to someone else. Does this remind you at all of the credit default swaps and the collateralized debt obligations that gave us the global financial crash of 2008?
Yeah, I got to tell you, it is feeling extremely bubbly right now. I was actually chatting to another financial analyst just the other day about this, and they were saying it's either a bubble or it's just extremely overvalued. And that's the only two options they could see, which I thought was very funny. It's either a big bubble or a smaller bubble, basically. It's a little concerning there that we've got people sort of playing both sides of the fence. AI is a genuine technology that is forging ahead, has so many potential applications, and is genuinely exciting. But it's also got so much hype. People don't fully understand it. There are a lot of companies trying to jump on the bandwagon of something that's trendy and makes them sound good. So they say, oh yeah, we're powered by AI. And it's just some sort of weird ChatGPT extension. When I look at what happened in the dot-com crash, that's exactly it. And you had things going for far more than it should have based on all these promises of, oh, it could, maybe, should possibly do this, that, and the other. And then, of course, it all cratered down. The digital changes promised by the dot-com boom were real. It's just that there was a lot of hype around it. There was a lot of companies that were promising things they couldn't deliver. And a lot of those peaked, cratered, disappeared.
I understand, but people say the dissimilarity between now and the dot-com crash is that you've got big players like Microsoft and Google and the really big firms with huge reserves. You've got them spending the enormous money, not just the newcomers who've, you know, talked up dreams that only came true 20 years later.
Yes, but it's quite interesting. In terms of spending the big money, they're all sort of swapping the same roughly $1 billion around each other. They're all just paying each other round and round and round in a circle, which is quite interesting and another one that fuels the bubble.
Coping with the Christmas spend, Francis Cook is with us. I'm sure many people who need to stay on budget will nevertheless go into debt they don't want to go into, you know, trying to please loved ones and make Christmas a special time. Any advice, any short advice, please?
Christmas obviously is really exciting for kids. So you probably do want to try and spoil the kids in your life a little bit, but you can hit the secondhand stores. That's brilliant. There's so much in the secondhand stores that's still in its packaging. I have found a lot of Paw Patrol in secondhand stores. Do you know how much that merch costs? That stuff is insane. So that's a real win when you find Paw Patrol in there. And then for the adults in your life, often it's more about spending a bit of time. And then I think, you know, if you're having a bigger get together with a bunch of people, make it a Christmas potluck. People love that. People love the chance to show off their cooking skills. Making one dish and bringing it is so much less effort than hosting. So they'll still be really excited to spend that time with you, time and effort.
Yeah, no, potluck is popular. You're dead right. And just finally, before we let you go, Frances, if you are heading into 2026 in the red, are there any tricks, tips to let you keep your head above water and avoid the debt spiral?
And so that classic one is subscriptions. They sneak up on us. Get rid of every subscription you can, especially if you're not using it, and check all of your regular bills. Make sure you're getting the best deal you can on those. Call up your power provider and negotiate. You'd be shocked at how many things you can negotiate down on price. But yeah, it does come down to have a little look. Are you going to be someone who's trying to earn more? Are you going to try to spend less? Spend a bit of time over the Christmas break strategizing on that. And then 2026, fingers crossed, maybe this will be finally the time where it gets a little bit better.
You're right. Let's hope for the absolute best in 2026. I hope you have a lovely Christmas in the nicest part of New Zealand.
Thank you, my friend. Yeah, you too. It should be good. I'm going to go far too hard on my mum makes the best Christmas cake there is, so I'm going to absolutely demolish that thing.
Frances Cook.
Just a note before you go. This podcast can only give you general information about how things work in most cases. It's not individual financial advice. We're all different, so some of this might not apply to your specific situation. Take what works for you, ignore the rest. If you're after individual financial advice, a financial advisor is always the best bet.